everyone. Welcome to the Baba Yaga Part 2. If you were one of the first people to listen to the Baba Yaga Part 1 last time, you'll notice that I titled it the Baby Yaga for about 5 hours. I don't know why that happened, but it did, and then I noticed it and I corrected it. So maybe that added a little extra something, I don't know. But welcome to part two. I am just embracing this material so much right now. And if you remember from last time, the three aspects that we'll explore in the various parts, you know, last time obviously being kind of the setup, and we dove into the story but didn't do much commentary on it. But I just want to remind us all that two things are guiding the entire series. And one is, this is really about encountering the deep feminine and what that means. And then because we've done so much work with the quantum psychology concepts that we've been talking about, we will be taking this folktale into that realm as well. We'll do some of that today and more of that next time as well. And then the other guiding principle is definitely part of this journey that you are on, that I am on, and definitely that the Baba Yaga myth is exploring is ultimately a very private matter between you and your God. And we'll get into that mostly next time in part three. But we'll touch on that in parts today. So that's sort of the setup again. Today we'll be going into Clarissa Pinkola Estes's breakdown of the story and analysis of the story. She is so phenomenal. I know I've mentioned her in the past, and I just can't recommend her enough. She's, in my estimation, deeply trustworthy with depth psychology, with things of the heart and of the soul, definitely matters of the deep feminine. She lives it. She has an exquisite gift with language. And I always feel newly inspired, newly grounded when I return to her work. So it's such a pleasure to offer some of her perspectives today. But I'll be also pivoting from that and adding sort of the quantum psychology aspect, because that has so captured my imagination right now. And I feel like always, the beautiful, profound shoulders we stand on of those who have done amazing work before us, it's our job to keep expanding on these concepts and ideas. So I'll be doing that. And what authority do I have to do that? Well, I do try to always ground it honestly in the work that has come before me, but I'm rooting this in my experience. And the farther I go, the more deeply I go into the soul life, into the psyche, I see that experience at the end of the day is really the only thing that matters. You know, we have our concepts and our guides, and they get us so far. And then we have the mystics and the poets, and they get us a little farther. And then you're left to experience it for yourself and metabolize it and bring that boon back to the topside world and live the rest of your days with as much joy and purpose and meaning and laughter and love as possible is how I see things. So we will explore Clarissa Pinkola Estes's take on the Baba Yaga with the added layer of quantum psychology. And then next time we're going to talk about the mystical part of the magic hands and why we can't probe too much into the mystery. And that's where we'll pick up that thread again of parts of this journey being deeply, deeply between you and your God, and there's not going to be a map for some of this, okay? And that's something that we'll touch on next time. But before we dive in, let's begin with the moon, and we are just in the slender, slender crescent, beginning crescent phases of the cycle of the Sturgeon moon. And I mentioned last time that August will have a full moon on the first and on the last of the month. So we're heading in to this cycle that will be full on August 1st. And this is really the cycle that begins early harvests. And the Sturgeon moon references the time in Native American life when the fishing of the sturgeon began and the abundance that that represented of these silvery fish. And it's my understanding they can become quite big. And so the time to fish and to partake of early harvests. And August is such a lovely time of farmers markets and gardens coming into their fullness. So this is what we're tipping toward in the Northern Hemisphere. And I'd like to share three small but full poems again from the Salt Volume by Nayara Wahid. She is so wonderful. And this one actually references the moon. She says, "When you are here, everything is wild. Moon." I loved that simplicity. The next one, "Even the small poems mean something. They are often whales in the bodies of tiny fish." I'll read that again. "Even the small poems mean something. They are often whales in the bodies of tiny fish." And I thought that was a nice reference to our Sturgeon moon, even though I don't know if that's what the author was referencing or not. And then this one, "There are feelings you haven't felt yet. Give them time. They are almost here. Fresh." Something about the deep feminine that I find so joyous is the more we embrace that work in our life, and oftentimes the older we are, perhaps in chronological age, as well as emotional maturity, etc., the fresher things become, the fresher our perspective, the fresher our countenance, and the fresher our enthusiasm for life. And I love that aspect of divine feminine work so much, because we are centering in on the mystery of life herself in doing so. And I've mentioned that this series will also be showing a new rhythm between the masculine and the feminine. And you remember last time that we talked about the four stages of consciousness by Peter Sage in some detail. And the first one was the victim consciousness, or the to-me consciousness, everything happening to me, which then evolves into the by-me consciousness, where we take agency, and that's when we're deeply involved with work ethic and going out in the external space and making something happen. That's where we learn psychology, that's where we get educated, etc. And that's a extremely valuable place and phase, but it can't be the end of the road, because then there's the through me consciousness, which is the flow state. But we often encounter that somewhat haphazardly or by accident, but it's beckoning us on to the as me state, or the I am state, where you're really metabolizing your divinity, your inner divinity. God is not out there somewhere. We're realizing that God is an internal experience, the divine, however you want to say that, your authentic self, and it is you. And I don't say that with any sort of arrogance, but the profound way that you are intimately connected to Source becomes the guiding principle. And what I'd like to offer here in terms of the masculine and the feminine, again, just as dual forces in everyone's psyche, regardless of gender, is that as we move into this space of the divine feminine, in my estimation, that means we're moving more steadily past work ethic into the through me and as me states of consciousness. And that's really important because being itself, imagination and vision itself, are the choices, are the desires that activate the work getting done by means greater than our own. And so it's a shift from sort of that external masculine doing that's more grounded in the work ethic zone into the masculine becoming the container in those through me and as me consciousness states that allows the divine feminine to delight, to choose, to desire, and it upholds her doing that. And the work, quote unquote, is then getting done by the quantum field, by the harmonies of the unconscious or the subconscious that are miraculously moving on our behalf. So this journey of the masculine and the feminine, as we move through Peter Sage's levels and stages of consciousness, I think is really important to talk about, in my estimation, again, it becoming more rooted in the feminine. And so to enter into the Baba Yaga story with that in mind, I think is really helpful. And I love that we're entering, you know, a time of year where abundance externally, harvest externally is upon us, because this work, this inner work, does bear such beautiful external fruit. And I know, speaking for myself, that, you know, there's a psychological wasteland time frame at times, or, you know, in biblical terms, it would be sort of wandering the desert for 40 years. When we are doing deep, deep psychological work in our interior space, in the unconscious, when we're grappling with those rhythms and epiphanies, a lot of times our external life can seem fallow or stunted. And that's because all the libido, all the life energy is in the interiority. And the promise of the return of the external vivacity is very real. And it's something to not lose faith in. But we can't question at some point. I know we all have moments of questioning or doubt because that's just part of the process. But ultimately, I think the more we mature in this inner psychic dive, in this inner psychic exploration, we just cease apologizing for what it might be appearing like in the external space, because we know that the work that's being done is of such enormous value, and that really anything external is going to be hollow if not backed up and indeed inspired by a fullness within. So I am finding for myself that I'm feeling less the need to apologize or explain anything, because we'll all get to that point at some juncture in our life where we're like, oh yeah, I get it. You know, all the life energy is internal right now, and it will balance and it will flow into the external space soon enough. But that conscious work in the internal is something of such enormous value, and it's not talked about a lot in the culture. So to the extent we're all engaged in that, you know, I honor each and every one of us. And we'll just borrow a phrase from Queen Elizabeth, and that is never explain, never complain. And there's a lot of wisdom in that. So today, let's dive right in to Clarissa Pinkola Estes's breakdown, and she has 9 stages that she refers to as tasks, psychic tasks that are happening in the story. And this is all taken from her volume, Women Who Run with the Wolves. So as a reminder of the story itself, you remember we have Vasilisa, who has a mother and a father who love her very much, but the mother dies, and the mother leaves her with a little doll, and the doll is very symbolic of the mother's blessing and of Vasilisa's dawning intuition. And then, of course, the father remarries, and there's a stepmother and step-sibling scenario, stepsisters, and, of course, they don't like Vasilisa, and the father is away, so that masculine presence is not there to protect, and she must deal with the step figures of the psyche on her own. They are anti her, they are antagonistic toward her, and pretty much ready to sacrifice her to the hag, the witch that lives deep in the forest, the Baba Yaga, because they have run out of fire, and they're sending Vasilisa deep into the woods to retrieve fire. And remember that just like in dreams, from the depth psychological perspective, folk and fairy tales are all representative of internal figures. So we all have a Baba Yaga, we all have a Vasilisa, we all have the stepsisters and the stepmother, etc., etc. So all of the things we're encountering in this story are aspects of our own psyche. So straight away, I like reminding all of us of that, because it's easy to think, oh yeah, the stepsisters, can't stand them, you know, if not for them, whatever. But they are us. There are parts of us that undermine, that try to get in the way, that throw sand in the gears, that doubt. And so to remember that this is alive in all of us, and what matters is that we have an awareness of that, and that we creatively work with those forces that are more shadow, more destructive, because when we give voice to them, when we give life to them in a creative way, then they can serve the psyche in a positive way. So we're not ever going to sort of corral all the hounds of hell. That is not our job, but we can have an awareness. And I always like thinking of this analogy, that it's like if you spend a certain amount of time in the depths, in the hell, in the underworld, and you persevere, and you have respect, and you have humility, and you develop your intuition and your connection to the divine, those darker forces develop a respect for you. And it's not something to ever be glib about or showy about, but I liken it to suddenly like the Hell's Angels, the motorcycle gang, they suddenly, you have their respect and they have your back in a really creative and unusual way. Now, you don't want to have tea with them every day. And, you know, like, I think I hear folks that are just coming into their shadow work, and that's a new concept to them, and it's a new idea. And I count myself among these. You know, my grad school work was my sort of initiatory dive into what the shadow is and what aspects of the psyche, what's going on there, et cetera. And it was really exciting. And I was glib about it. You know, I just was so hungry for it, and I had a voracious appetite to learn all I could. But I think I went into it thinking, oh, I can handle this. And I got my ass kicked. I mean, not so much in grad school, but just having that attitude, you know, later on, just thinking I could handle anything of the depths. And that is not the case. And I've been greatly humbled. And perhaps that is part of the process. But when I hear folks heading into shadow work and I kind of don't hear their humility about it yet or whatever, I always wince a little bit. And again, maybe that's just part of, you know, you got to get burned a little bit before that respect comes. But when there is that healthy respect, I think those darker forces in the psyche honor you back. And we can live then the more positive aspects of those archetypes, which is very thrilling to live less from a space of fear. But it's just that continual awareness and dialogue and, again, humility that I think is essential. And we all like enjoying the positive aspects of these archetypes and of these inner figures, of these inner characters. But to at least acknowledge and wrestle a bit with how to creatively and skillfully dialogue with the less desirable parts is really important. So I think a lot of Clarissa Pinkola Estes's work in the tasks is by way of doing that. So I love that. I'll read often straight from her text, but you know, that her chapter on this is just full and lush and beautiful. So read that in your own time and in your own way, because it's so powerful. And I'm just hitting highlights, obviously, you know, or we'd be here 8 hours. But she begins by saying that, you know, when Vasilisa goes to the Baba Yaga, there's one difference in her story than the version I read to you last time. And I want to accent that today because I think it's an important nuance in the story. And when Vasilisa is sent to the Baba Yaga, and remember, she meets the riders of the dawn and the sunset and of night, all on horseback. So the red and the white and the black, those are the alchemical colors. We touched on that last time. And then she comes to this fantastic hut that's on chicken legs, and the Baba Yaga herself, you know, is fierce and moves through the sky in a mortar and pestle and using twigs to erase where she's been so nobody can see. And, you know, there's all the skulls that make up the fence around her house and the eerie glow from within the skulls. She's a formidable, formidable figure. And this one detail that Clarissa Pinkola Estes adds to the story, I love. And that is this. When she first meets her, Vasilisa consulted her doll and asked, "Is this the house we seek?" And the doll, in its own way, answered, "Yes, this is what you seek." And before she could take another step, Baba Yaga in her cauldron descended on Vasilisa and shouted down at her, "What do you want?" And the girl trembled, "Grandmother, I come for fire. My house is cold. My people will die. I need fire." Baba Yaga snapped, "Ah, yes, I know you and your people. Well, you useless child, you let the fire go out. That's an ill-advised thing to do. And besides, what makes you think I should give you the flame?" Vasilisa consulted her doll and quickly replied, "Because I ask." Baba Yaga purred, "You're lucky. That is the right answer." That's the detail that I wanted to add from Clarissa Pinkola Steeze's version of this story. I love that. That automatically denotes an agency, that you don't just go in to the forest and prepare to meet her without some strength to your container. And we're moving from the consciousness of just pure strength into what power is, because those are very different things. I would say strength is more the masculine, outward going, perseverance, work ethic, quality. Power is resting in the feminine presence of the divine and releasing the greater divine to assist in the accomplishing of tasks. So moving from strength to power is a really important distinction that is happening both in terms of levels of consciousness and in this story. But to even begin your journey to the Baba Yaga, you have to have a little bit of moxie to begin with. And I love that she just says, because I ask. That's enough. That hint of no apology is really essential to bring into our work with this figure of the psyche, this fertile, fecund figure of the psyche. That's really important. So if you'll remember, she has to do a bunch of tasks, right? And she has to cook and clean for the Baba Yaga and take care of the house and the hut and the yard. And she has to do some rather impossible tasks where she's sorting mildewed corn from the good corn and where she's sorting poppy seeds from dirt, etc., etc. And there are mystical things happening in the hut, including the appearance of the disembodied hands that respond to the Baba Yaga's commands. So that's sort of bringing the story up to speed again so that we're all on the same page. The first task that Steeze talks about is we first have to allow the too good mother to die. So this is the death of the sweet mother in the beginning. And we have to allow that part of our psyche, we have to allow it to die, because there's a naivete in that aspect of ourselves that is not going to see us through these larger tasks, that's not going to help us. We can always sort of have the sweet memory of having it perhaps in early childhood or even into adolescence a bit. But there's a time when you have to let that go and go into the fiercer parts of the feminine, even though it's very demanding. So straight away, Steeze says, accepting that the ever-watchful, hovering, protective psychic mother is not adequate as a central guide for one's future instinctual life, the too good mother dies. Taking on the task of being on one's own, developing one's own consciousness about danger, intrigue, politic, becoming alert by oneself for oneself, letting die what must die. As the too good mother dies, the new woman is born. And again, this needs to happen in all of us. Women have a particular journey with this, but the feminine also must be honored in men and in all humans, as well as the masculine being honored by all of us. Okay, so these energies, active and receptive in a very full sense, not just being passive, but being hardwired and tuned in to the psychic fertility and being able to receive that and follow its guidance. These masculine and feminine energies have a beautiful flow to them. Back to Estes. In the tale, the initiatory process begins when the dear and good mother dies. She is not there to touch Vasilisa's hair anymore. In all our lives as daughters, there is a time when the good mother of the psyche, the one which served as appropriately and well in earlier times, turns into a too good mother, one which, by virtue of her overly safeguarding values, begins to prevent us from responding to new challenges and thereby to deeper development. So we're not going to grow if we cling to this part of our psyche for too long. And Estes makes a nice analogy with wolf pups. She says, among wolves, when a wolf mother nurses her pups, she and they spend time lazing about. Everyone slumps over everyone else in a great puppy pile. The outer world and the world of challenges are far away. However, when the wolf mother finally trains the pups to hunt and forage, she shows them her teeth more often than not. She snaps and demands they keep up. She shoves them down if they don't do what she requires. And so it is, in order to pursue further development, that we exchange the hovering internal mother, which was so apt for us when we were young, for another kind of mother, one who lives even deeper in the psychic wilderlands. One who is both escort and teacher. She is a loving mother, but also fierce and demanding. And I'll just throw in right here that in relationship, in intimate partnership, and this is weaving in now the quantum psychology piece, what I'm finding is when you move through into these upper levels of consciousness, what is doing the work more than telling your partner to go read a good book or go to a certain workshop where they're going to learn how to be a conscious man, etc., etc., what is doing more skillful, more powerful work is accessing the deep feminine within us. Because when we have set aside the mothering and we're not mothering in relationship to ourselves in this first sort of mothering way, when we're moving into these deeper layers, then by definition of just the energy exchange, our partners, anybody we're in contact with, has to respond in kind to the depths we're going to. So in other words, if you're still relying on the too good mother to run your life, you're going to have that mirrored back to you in relationship. And I see so many people like trying to fix their partner and send them off to figure stuff out in the external world. That can be helpful to a point, but the real power comes in when you're like, I'm going to leave that part of mothering behind and I'm going to go into these deeper places of the feminine, because then my partnerships, my relationships with work and with my children and however they manifest all have to mirror that depth as well. So I'm increasingly, you know, I can read things that are inspiring or show me another aspect of the divine feminine that I would love to embrace for myself. But for quite a while now, I have stopped like giving things to, you know, the people in my life to go read and, you know, shape themselves up with, because I see that the real power is in the mirror. And that's definitely from our quantum psychology work, that if I'm accessing those places, then those in my life have to be too, because that is the work of the mirror. The second task, exposing the crude shadow. So Estes says, in this part of the story, when we're dealing with the stepfamily, our task here is learning even more mindfully to let go of the overly positive mother, finding that being good, being sweet, being nice will not cause life to sing. I love that phrase. There is where Estes is so masterful with her language and her understanding. She's obviously living this, or she couldn't write this way. But I love that, because so often, women are encouraged, women and girls are continually encouraged to keep pleasing others, to keep the cogs of society moving in pleasant ways by looking a certain way, by acting a certain way, by covering all the bases so other people don't have to. And it is exhausting and it keeps everybody psychically crippled. And I love how she says, finding that being good, being sweet, being nice will not cause life to sing. And we want life to sing. And I have had so much backlash in my life when I have made these pivots internally and externally get flack, get protest from that. And if you're in the work ethic consciousness, you'll fight back. You'll have diatribes. You'll have lectures and sermons. As you move up in consciousness, you will ignore that and keep feeding your fire. And I'm finding that the latter is so much less exhausting and so much more powerful. And it's not feeding the pendulum of arguing with others. So I love that there are more skillful ways, because in the beginning, when you shift, the external world and those in it may not love it. That's fine. Ignore it and keep going. Vasilisa, moving back to the text, becomes a slave, but it does not help. She can't do enough for the step family, right? Experiencing directly one's own shadow nature, particularly the exclusionary, jealous, and exploitive aspects of self, the stepmother and stepsisters, acknowledging these unequivocally, making the best relationship one can with the worst parts of ourselves, letting the pressure build between who one is taught to be and who one really is. Ultimately, working toward letting the old self die and the new intuitive self be born. These are the tasks in the second part, exposing the shadow. So that initial encounter with the step family and how awful they are. And we all know it. We all know it. When you're focused on pleasing other people, that will never be satiated. And you will just be a wisp of a person. There will be no depth or interest to you. You will be brittle. And we've all had moments in that. And it's horrific. And it takes courage to move beyond it, because the culture likes us to stay there. You know, like I said, it keeps others from having to go into their psychic depths. Estes says, to be ourselves causes us to be exiled by many others, and yet to comply with what others want causes us to be exiled from ourselves. It is a tormenting tension, and it must be borne. But the choice is clear. Absolutely, the choice is clear. But to be aware that no matter what external voices might be railing against this inner pivot, what matters is being wise to the internal ones that doubt you, that say you can't do it, that you're not good enough, you're not bold enough, that you'll have to address this soul work after you get X, Y, Z, and 1, 2, 3 done off the to-do list. Those are the step figures to be aware of, because once again, if we're dealing with and dialoguing with the inner step figures, the outer ones will have to quiet very quickly. If we get into external confrontation, it's just going to go on for a longer amount of time. So I'm really seeing the wisdom, even when I've moved through this story before, when I think, like I said last time, I've been to the Baba Yaga before, but I'm coming to her now for a very different kind of fire. I'm more in those through me, as me places, and that's a different kind of fire than in the beginning of my womanhood. And so coming to her now is much more an awareness of seeing my internal fire, step figures as opposed to any flack I'm getting in the external world, because it's such a more efficient way of dealing with the external noise is just to dive right into the internal and just ignore the rest. And I get plenty of noise. I get plenty of noise. We all do. But as we move out of work ethic consciousness or the buy me consciousness into the others, you just see the futility of engaging externally with that. Because again, we're honoring the mirror of our human experience, that what we are giving off in the beacon of the unconscious is what we're receiving back. The third task, navigating in the dark, Estee says, the task at this point in the story is consenting to venture into the locus of deep initiation, which is entering the forest, and beginning to experience the new and dangerous feeling, noumen, of being in one's intuitive power. Learning to develop sensitivity as regards to direction to the mysterious unconscious, and relying solely on one's inner senses. Learning the way back to the wild mother, heeding the doll's directions. Learning to feed intuition, feeding the doll. Letting the frail, know-nothing maiden die away even more, and shifting power to the doll, i.e. your intuition. So this is when she's in the forest. This is when she's meeting the horses and riders that are heralding the sunrise, the sunset, the day, the night. We're entering into the mystical realms. And even though there's so much wildness here, there is a rhythm and a reason and a rhyme to it. There is an innate order among the wildness, among the wild space. So I think that's important to remember, that there is an innate order that reveals itself and that can be trusted. And it's not just a free-for-all in there. It's not just a chaos. Because there are parts of our psyche that we meet that are very chaotic, very much in the unknown, etc. But to even know, I know Jung says this, that within those chaos moments, there's also a secret order revealing itself. But it's not the order that makes the ego feel good by imposing it from the outside. When you do this inner work, when you dive into the forest, you're along for the ride. And your commitment to it is essential, because it's not always pretty. It's not always on a timetable that we love. It's not always convenient for things we have to tend to in our external life. And our ability to continue to prioritize it above and beyond anything else going on in our life is working that new muscle of letting the divine or the authentic self take care of external details, because we're beginning to prioritize the most important thing to prioritize, the thing that gives vitality to our life itself. We're starting to work from the inside out instead of the outside in. Here is a beautiful line. Estee says, there is no greater blessing a mother can give her daughter than a reliable sense of the veracity of her own intuition. The greatest thing we can give our kids is by our own example, showing them that we're doing this in our work, and we don't have to do it perfectly, but honoring it. And it may mean prioritizing things that aren't quote unquote the family. You know, it may be honoring our art or our exploration of something or our time needed in contemplation or solitude. Our partners are going to have to understand that. And then we have to trust that that is going to give back to everybody in our lives in ways that the old ways of being couldn't possibly touch. And when we stop apologizing for that and when we stop doubting that, we see that reflected back more quickly. Estee says, what does this wildish intuition do for women? Like the wolf, intuition has claws that prize things apart and pins things down. It has eyes that can see through the shields of persona. It has ears that hear beyond the range of mundane human hearing. With these formidable psychic tools, a woman takes on a shrewd and even precognitive animal consciousness, one that deepens her femininity and sharpens her ability to move confidently in the outer world. And I love this line. I mean, I could quote her all day, but this passage is essential. The breaking of the bond between a woman and her wildish intuition is often misunderstood as the intuition itself being broken. And I know that's happened in my life. You think, well, my intuition led me astray or whatever. This is not the fact. It is not intuition which is broken, but rather the matrilineal blessing on intuition, the handing down of intuitive reliance between a woman and all females of her line who have gone before her. It is that long river of women that has been dammed. A woman's grasp of her intuitive wisdom may be weak as a result, but with exercise, it will come back and become fully manifested. This intuitive function belongs to all women. It is a massive and fundamental receptivity, not receptivity as once touted in classic psychology, that is, a passive vessel, but receptivity as in possessing immediate access to a profound wisdom that reaches down into women's very bones. This is actually the legacy to give our children. And to be able to tell your daughter or your son, I know you know what to do. And to trust that. And even if it looks like a catastrophe, knowing that life loves these precious ones even more than you do. And that life has their back even more than you ever could. And that whatever needs to be taught and learned and metabolized through experience is so much more essential than anything you could offer by playing it safe, either by your own example or by being the too good mother in their life. This also applies to partners. Our partners have to shine. Our partners have to show up. But again, I've shifted very recently from talking about that externally to moving into that place internally. And that is a very different thing. And it has very different results and very powerful results and results that may in the beginning look counter to what space you're holding for divine partnership with a beloved other. But to remain focused on your rendezvous with yourself will sort out in the external soon enough. That's where our focus needs to be. I'm on a rendezvous with myself, with my interiority, my inner masculine, my inner feminine, and how they are assisting me and how they are coming into communion. By doing that, and remaining focused there, the external partnership will absolutely find its rhythm and its way. The fourth task, facing the wild hag. Estes says, here it is being able to stand in the face of the fearsome wild goddess without wavering, that is, facing the imago of the fierce mother meeting up with the Baba Yaga herself, familiarizing oneself with the arcane, the odd, the otherness of the wild, residing at Baba Yaga's house for a while, bringing some of her values into our lives, thereby becoming ourselves a little odd in a goodly way, eating her food, learning to face great power in others and subsequently our own power, letting the frail and too sweet child die back even further. This is a constant calling away of the naive, of the too good mother, of the too naive child. I love how Estee says, this house of the Baba Yagas is alive. It's bursting with enthusiasm, with joyous life. These attributes are the main fundaments of the archetypal psyche of Wild Woman, a joyous and wild life force, where houses dance, where inanimates such as mortars fly like birds, where the old woman can make magic, where nothing is what it seems, but for the most part is far better than it seemed to begin with. She says, the giving of the intuitive doll by the original sweet mother is incomplete without the task giving and testing done by the old wild one. Baba Yaga is the marrow of the instinctive and integrated psyche. We have to be tested, and we have to open to the wonder that the unconscious has so many other ways of navigating and being and moving through us. It's not of the logical, rational mind. It is not of that space. And again, trust that if you're somebody who really likes order, trust that there is an innate inner order that will reveal itself. Things aren't going to go amok. They're going to be unpredictable. And we have to be able to withstand that. We have to bear being misunderstood. We have to bear uncertainty. Estee says, all the creatures in dreams remind the woman dreamer of her elemental self, the Yaga self, the enigmatic, the intense power of the life-death life mother. Yes, we are saying that to be Yaga-ish is good and that we must be able to stand it. To be strong does not mean to sprout muscles and flex. It means meeting one's own numinosity without fleeing. Actively living with the wild nature in one's own way. It means to be able to learn, to be able to stand what we know. It means to stand and live. And again, the real work is meeting the critics of this that reside internally. Internally. Because if we meet them and have a dialogue with them, the outer critics will quiet soon enough. Remember that several times ago we talked about, I think it was in the Linka Latanska work, she talks about meeting your inner prostitute. And that's an important figure to be really intimate with because she has an incredible positive aspect. But when we are cutting ourselves too short, or when we are thinking we deserve too little, or when we're overgiving in any way, psychically, externally, and thinking it's our job to bleed out, so to speak, from the overgiving, as opposed to living from and sharing from a place of fullness, that is when we're experiencing the shadow side of the prostitute. And it's so essential to know when you've slipped back into that pattern, because we can turn that around immediately by a conversation with her, like, oh my God, you know, look what I'm doing. Talk to me. How do I write this internally? How do I open to all that is indeed already mine? How do I trust that? How do I know that I am deeply secure, deeply celebrated, deeply cherished? Again, this is an inside job. We're going into those layers deep, deep within. The fifth task, serving the non-rational. And here's Estes again. At this point, we have to stay with the hag, acclimating to the great wildish powers of the feminine psyche, coming to recognize her power, our power, and the power of inner purification, unsoiling, sorting, nourishing, building energy and ideas, washing the Yaga's clothes, cooking for her, cleaning her house, and sorting out the elements. The Baba Yaga, the Wild Mother, is the teacher whom we can consult in these matters. She instructs the ordering of the house of the soul. She imbues an alternate order to the ego, one where magic can happen, joy can be done, appetite is intact, things are accomplished with gusto. Baba Yaga is the model of being true to the self with the capital S. She teaches both death and renewal. It is not easy for Vasilisa to be in the Baba Yaga's house and to perform all these chores. I mean, that's a massive undertaking. But to learn her ways, to learn to stay with the uncanny, to learn to stay with the discernment required and the purification and the letting of these old ideas go, the letting of these old habitual emotions go. This is tapping into our vitality, where we're not just blown about by things that are happening in the external space, where we're choosing our responses, and where we are following our heart-led desires. Remember, we've talked about that so much in the context of the quantum psychology, is that your desire, your heart's desire, is a God-given impulse, a goddess-given impulse. The divine wants to experience that fill-in-the-blank through the form of you. That is sacred desire. That is not something to be trifled with or put off until retirement or put off until the right this or that materializes. It is the way to those things. It is the way to experience those things through the desire. Neville Goddard says, within the desire itself is the means of its fulfillment. That is the path alive. And it will be an uncanny road, I promise you. And I know you know that. I know you know that. But it just helps us to revisit that idea and encourage each other. Estes talks about what this might look like. For many women, this task requires that they clear a time each day for contemplation, for a space to live in that is clearly their own, with papers, pens, paints, tools, conversations, time, freedoms that are for this work alone. For many, psychoanalysis, contemplation, mediation, the taking of solitude, and other experiences of descent and transformation provide this special time and place for the work. Each woman has her own preferences, her own way. But because it is Baba Yaga's hut that Vasilisa sweeps, because it is Baba Yaga's yard, we are also speaking of keeping unusual ideas clear and ordered. These ideas include those which are uncommon, mystical, soulful, and uncanny. And I would offer here for myself, the transurfing reality concepts and disciplines are so uncanny, are so revolutionary and challenging to the status quo. And that has been manna to my life. That has been so deeply nourishing. And, you know, talking about that to the average person might just seem like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Don't react to something that's happening in the external world. That's crazy. And it will seem crazy. It will seem crazy to people who are deeply in the by me consciousness, that are deeply in psychology, that are deeply in the scholarly life, etc. And that's okay, because I have been there too. And those were very important times. Those moments in that space build a morality and a structure and a vitality in us in terms of having good boundaries. But the true vitality is this wildness that can then blossom upon that structure. And that's when you move beyond it. That's when you move past it, deeply, deeply into the feminine space, where you're engaging with your life in a completely different way. And it would seem crazy. It would absolutely seem crazy to those that are still sort of in those earlier phases of the human story. And that's fine. We all move through all of these. And we all want to default back to them sometimes when the unknown gets too uncomfortable. I get that. You know, I find myself slipping back into, oh, I better go out and figure something out. Or, you know, the work ethic space. But I'm catching it now and saying the smart move here is to deeply relax. The smart move here is to deeply relax and trust the doll in my pocket. Because the doll, the intuition, is what is getting all the tasks done. Vasilisa has to hold steady emotionally, but the doll is the one getting all the tasks done. Estes comments that to see this process through, you have to have your passions ignited. To cook the Baba Yaga's food, to clean her home, will take the passion of the fire in the hut. Now, this isn't the fire that she gives Vasilisa, you know, to take away of her own, but it is akin to it. She has to do this work by tending to the fire, to her passions and to her desires. She says, we mistakenly think the fire and the cooking are like one of those feisty houseplants that can go without water for 8 months before the poor thing keels over. It is not so. The fire bears and requires watching, for it is easy to let the flame go out. The Yaga must be fed. There's hell to pay if she goes hungry. And we see that in our lives when things become barren. You know, there's two different kinds of barren. There's the barren because we're not tending to the soul life. And then there's sort of the poetic, mythological wasteland that can appear in the external space because all of the libido is turned to the inner fire, to the inner process for a while. But that sorts out. That will sort out quickly even, because as is within, so is without. And when that bursts into bloom in the interiority, it will burst into bloom in the external space. But to have a barren life externally because we are brittle and spread too thin and don't even know how to tend the soul fire anymore because it's been so long, that is a different kind of barrenness. And we can always gather the ember and begin again. This is never work that is lost to us forever. The ember is always there. The ember is always there. But it takes a commitment to keep tending the fire while these tasks are completed. The sixth task, separating this from that. Estes says, learning fine discrimination, separating one thing from the other with finest discernment, learning to make fine distinctions in judgment, sorting the mildewed corn from the good corn, and sorting the poppy seeds from the pile of dirt, observing the power of the unconscious and how it works even when the ego is not aware. That would be the pairs of hands which appear in the air. More learning about life and death, the corn and the poppy seeds. So that discernment, kind of like I've already talked about, with when to make an external move, when not to, when to react externally, when not to, when to turn that gaze internally and say, I think I've got some doubt going on internally. It's going to do no good to yell at everybody externally when the reason that's going off is because I have an internal space of doubt, etc. Allowing the lush life, even in the process of this entire transformation, to also sustain us, to allow reprieve and relief and moments where we catch our breath so as to continue on in this deep and beautiful, beautiful work. Estes says, this is one of the loveliest phrases in the story is when we're talking about sorting the seeds and the corn. The fresh corn, mildewed corn, poppy seed, and dirt are all remnants of an ancient healing apothecary. These substances are used as balms and salves, infusions and poultices to hold other medicines on the body. As metaphors, they are also medicines for the mind. Some nourish, others put to rest. Some cause languor, others stimulation. There are facets of the life, death, life cycles. Baba Yaga is not only asking Vasilisa to separate this from that, to determine the difference between things of like kind, such as real love from false love, or nourishing life from spoiled life, but she is also asking her to distinguish one medicine from the other. It's a beautiful metaphor for this sort of inner apothecary. And again, I would echo that so much of the transurfing disciplines, so much of the quantum leap strategies that we've talked about with Lenka Latonska's work, those ways of framing the challenges and the steadfastness emotionally that is required. You know, I have to say that emotional maturity is so much its own reward. It just feels so good to not be whipped around by even the most intense external experiences, to just be able to look at that and say, I'm good. My inner life is cooking. My inner life is transforming. My inner life is bursting into bloom. The rest will sort. I'm good. I'm solid. I have the archetypes, the ferocity, the fecundity, the wealth of the Baba Yaga, and my dialogue with her, my commitment to learning her ways, my respect for leaving her alone, and to know the difference when to do the former and the latter, my ability to stand in the unknown and feel its embrace around me as a loving tending to me, as opposed to a void. These things are their own reward, and it just takes my breath away sometimes how quiet and powerful and serene and beautiful that can all be, even while external pieces are sorting. So that is something to trust. That is definitely something to trust. The seventh task, asking the mysteries. Here, she says, questioning and trying to learn more about the life, death, life nature, and how it functions. Vasilisa asks about the horseman, learning the truth about being able to understand all the elements of the wild nature. But again, she doesn't inquire too much about the hands, or indeed at all, because as the Baba Yaga says, to know too much can make one old too soon. And we'll talk about that in part three more fully. But basically, you know, the alchemical nature of the mysteries, we can learn a little bit about, and we can have some direction and some guidance. And the negredo, or the black, is when elements of our lives are dissolving and breaking down. And the white is the purification of that into something newly born, like the phoenix rising, which would be the red again, the rebedo. And these processes cycle again and again and again. And to be able to be still and to be whole and to be as joyful as possible, even in the midst of all of that, knowing that the cycle returns, knowing that rebirth happens again, is to be in touch with those greater cycles and those greater natures. Following the moon is why I do that, because there's so many deaths and rebirths just even within a month. And it just reminds us that that is our nature. We're constantly letting go, purifying, and becoming again. And that journey can be less traumatic the more we can surrender into it and the more we see the beauty of all sides of it, even the uncomfortable parts. And again, we'll just put a pin in the magic hands and what's going on there with the deep numinous and the deep mystery, because that is going to be more for next time in part three. But the eighth task, she says, is when we stand on all fours. This is taking on the immense power to see and affect others, receiving the skull, receiving the fire in the skull. That incredible moment when the yaga looks at her and says, all right, here's your fire, and you better go. Looking at one's life situations with this new light, finding the way back to the old step family with this entirely new perspective. I'm reading straight from the text. The yaga is not repelled by the fact of the mother's blessing. Remember, she asks Vasilisa at one point, how did you get all this work done? And Vasilisa has also developed a wily part to her nature. And she doesn't tell the Baba Yaga about the doll. And in fact, just refers to that as my mother's blessing. And remember, the Baba Yaga sort of winces at that. And she's like, I don't have room for blessing in this house. You better go. Estee says, the Yaga is not repelled by the fact of the blessing, but is rather put off by the fact that the blessing is from the too good mother of long ago. The nice, the sweet, the darling of the psyche. So what originally began as the mother's blessing has deepened dramatically into the reliable, secure, steadfast intuition of Vasilisa. And her journey with that has just been profound beyond belief. Although the yaga could blow life's breath into a mouse child, Estee says, with infinite tenderness, she could be said to know well enough to stay in her own land. Her land is the underworld of the psyche. The too good mother's land is that of the topside world. Although sweetness can fit into the wild cannot long fit into sweetness. When women integrate this aspect of the yaga, they change from accepting without question every tinker, every barb, every dadu, everything that comes their way. There is a discernment about what do I really want? What is truly valuable here, both internally and externally? Having now, through serving the yaga, created a capacity within herself which she did not have before, Vasilisa receives a portion of the wild hag's power. Some women are afraid that this deep knowing via instinct and intuition will cause them to be reckless or thoughtless, but this is unfounded fear. The only way we can truly be reckless is to not engage this process at all. Again, there is an inner cosmos to this initiation. Estes says, and this part is so powerful here, so when the yaga gives Vasilisa a lighted skull, she is giving her an old woman icon, an ancestral knower, to carry with her for life. She is initiating her into a matrilineal legacy of knowing, one which in the caves and canyons of the psyche remains whole and thriving. So off goes Vasilisa into the dark forest with the fiery skull. She wandered about to find the yaga. Now she returns to home, more certain, more sure, hips aiming straight ahead. This is the ascent from the initiation of deep intuition. Intuition has been set into Vasilisa like a center jewel in a crown. When a woman has come this far, she has managed to leave the protection of her own inner too good mother, learn to expect and deal with adversity in the outer world in a powerful rather than complicit manner. She has become aware of her own shadowy and inhibitory stepmother and stepsisters and the destruction they mean to do to her. So she's returning with the power of her own fire and the clarity and the confidence that this brings to all aspects of her life, internally and externally, in terms of her decision-making. Which brings us to the ninth task, recasting the shadow. Estes says, using one's acute vision, the fiery eyes, to recognize and react to the negative shadow of one's own psyche and or negative aspects of persons and events in the outer world, recasting the negative shadows in one's psyche with hag fire, the wicked stepfamily which formerly tortured Vasilisa is turned to cinders, i.e. neutralized, right? These characters exist in the psyche. They can be there, but they don't have to run the show. They do not have to run the show. And they can be neutralized and given creative voice so that the positive archetypes are moving and pulsing through us. It's so incredible because my daughter gave me a ceramic skull at Christmas, and it's bejeweled. You know, it's a black skull, but as you move down from the crown through the eye sockets, down into the nose, down into the chin, it's bejeweled in gold. So part of it is all black, and then increasingly gold, 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 gold as you move down. And this is on a nail right next to the mirror in my bathroom. And it's such a profound image to me, and it was, you know, when she gave it to me, and it was so indicative of what I was discovering within myself and this whole new way of relating and being and affecting change from inner space as opposed to outer space, external space. And when I've revisited the Baba Yaga and I see pictures of this fairy tale and Vasilisa going through the forest with the fire and the skull on a stick, I just couldn't help but see my own skull next to my mirror and see the symbolism and the connection there and see that indeed the deeper we go into that work, that inner feminine, that inner fire, that what we're discovering is ourselves and the gold and the desires come alive. The most beautiful aspects of our life, this is actually where they are given the fertile ground to spring into life. And it takes commitment to work through the black, but to know that underneath the black is this exquisite gold, gives us that tenacity to keep surrendering and to keep trusting the deep feminine. And I do, I can honestly say, in the most challenging of times, I trust that inner feminine because I can feel her and I can sense her. And I know that you can too. And the beautiful aspect of the divine masculine moves from being a work ethic horse in the world to protecting and honoring her, to protecting the space around her so that she can know her own delight. So this dance is where these through me and as me consciousness dynamics with the masculine and the feminine reinvent themselves. It's not about the war of the sexes duking it out in the public square like it is in the work ethic consciousness space or the self-help consciousness space or the feminist consciousness space. All of those are important moments, but they are not, we are not to linger there because there's a much larger, much more powerful, much more effective way of realizing everything that is in our heart to experience and realize. So next time we will visit part three of this very mysterious aspect of the hands that do the Baba Yaga's bidding and the part of the journey that will be between you and your authentic self, you and your God, however you would like to frame that or word that, relate to that, that's where we'll dive in next time. Thanks for being part of today with me. And until next time, take good care. Hi, everyone. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember to hit subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if my work is nourishing your heart and imagination, consider supporting the Apothecary Podcast. Just follow the links to make a contribution. And for the full scope of my projects and offerings, including my weekly newsletter, visit lorigreen.net.